You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested, cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.
Hello, and welcome to Cool People Did Cool Stuff, your weekly dose of sometimes people fight against the bad things. I'm your host, Margaret Kiljoy. With me today as a guest is... Okay, there was no one else that I could have had as a guest for this episode. With me today as a guest is Sophie Lichterman, who you all might be aware of as the Webby Award-winning podcast producer, most known for her work with Jamie Loftus. Sophie, how are you doing?
It's my favorite intro I've ever received. Also, shout out Jamie Loftus, pre-order her book, or by the time this comes out, order her book, Raw Dog. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I literally pre-ordered it today after telling other people to pre-order it for a long time.
Hey, a pre-order is a pre-order, okay?
Yeah. And our producer today is Sophie.
Oh my God, hi, Sophie. Sophie. Hi, Sophie.
Yeah. Ian is our audio engineer. Hi, Ian. Once people hear the topic, they'll understand why Sophie is the guest today. Anyway, Ian is our audio engineer. Hi, Ian. The theme music was written for us by Unwoman. Since people ask me this about once a week, I'm saying Unwoman, like not woman, like UNWOMEN. That is the name I'm saying every week.
No, you're not. You said Unwomen. You just spelled Unwomen. You're saying Unwoman.
Oh, God. I can't do anything.
You fucked it up in writing and audio-wise.
You know, as funny as I was typing it, I was like, why am I bothering to type this out with dashes? I'll just look at the word and spell it. But clearly, I'll mess it up either way. So, today's cool people. Sophie, have you ever heard of, dogs?
Yeah, my reason for living.
Yeah. Dogs are the best. Yeah. If you were to rate dogs into tiers, all dogs would be S tier, which is the highest tier.
Uh-huh.
That is a scientifically categorizable fact.
Cosine?
With the exception of the Boston Dynamics robot dog, which is not a dog.
No, doesn't count.
Yeah. Those have to be taken individually and judged on their individual actions. Today, this week, we're talking about dogs. In general, we're going to be talking about riot dogs, but I'm obsessed with context.
Context,
so we're going to talk about dogs.
Baby, let's go. Who let the dogs out? Okay, I won't. I promised Margaret I wouldn't do the who let the dogs out reference more than once, so I'm getting it out of the way early. So, yeah, Margaret, tell me, who let the dogs out? Who?
Probably Siberia, but possibly cool. Southeast Asia, actually. So... dogs are the first domesticated animal. Yeah, I'm going to take this way back. Dogs are the first domesticated animal. Dogs are not descended from modern wolves. They are descended from the Pleistocene wolf, from which the modern gray wolf also descends. So they're like cousins or siblings to the modern gray wolf. Basically, dogs are descended from the wolves that evolved to hunt now extinct megafauna like mammoths and shit, which is part of why dogs are so cool. They roamed over basically the entire northern hemisphere. These are the wolves. They roamed over the entire northern hemisphere in the last ice age. They crossed the Bering Land Bridge and shit, the same as the mammoths did. And when the megafauna went away, so did these wolves. Let's talk about these wolves. Wolves are cooperative game hunters. They also don't really travel in packs.
Interesting. It's more of like it's not like a pack. It's more of like a duo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, there's often a lot of them, but it's a family unit. It's usually a nuclear family. It is a mated pair and their kids. And I can't talk about wolves without bringing up the alpha wolf thing. I really want to talk about the alpha wolf thing, so I'm gonna. Do you know the alpha wolf thing?
I do, because Anderson, my dog, who is perfect, shout out Anderson, recovering from surgery and still the baddest of the baddest bitches. I call her an alpha fox because fox, cousin of the wolf, looks like more foxy than wolfy.
Okay.
And has the personality of an alpha fox, which, I mean, of an alpha wolf. See, that's how.
Well, but alpha wolves aren't real. This is what I'm trying to tell you.
No. It all goes back to, you know, the male authority.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
am I there?
Yeah. I'm gonna tell the story of it because I'm really excited about.
Let's
always
do it.
Because one of my favorite things in the world is that when people call themselves alpha males, they're basically calling themselves captive. They are saying, I am in captivity.
Yeah, you are.
Because the alpha male thing is entirely based on a combination of lies and misunderstandings about wolf behavior. In 1970, this guy named David Meck put out a book called The Wolf, The Ecology and Behavior of an Endangered Species. Since then, this guy is still alive. He rules. He spent decades trying to be like, hey, a lot of the stuff in that first book was wrong. We've learned an awful lot since that book came out. Or, to quote him more directly, we've learned more about wolves since that book's publication than we had in all of previous history. But the book is still in print, and he's tried time and time again to get it taken out of print, but it sells well, so the publisher's like, whatever, yeah. Why would we?
Yeah, I was going to say alpha capitalism.
Yeah, totally. The thing that this book got wrong, and he was not the first person to get this wrong. He was, I believe it goes back to the 1930s, but I didn't put that part in the script, so I'm not sure. What it got wrong was the idea of an alpha wolf in a pecking order. He called it a lead wolf in the book, but it's the same idea. It's what the alpha wolf people get the thing from. It was about how a dominant male controls the entire pack and picks on the weakest members. And this is only true of wolves in captivity. So, next time you meet someone who says they're an alpha, well, I've never actually, have you ever met a human in real life who says that they're an alpha?
Just unfortunately on many, many dating apps.
Oh, God.
Yeah. A lot of times they lead with that in their bio and that's an instant.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You ever seen, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's a tragedy to deal with cis men. It's really horrible.
There's this video that lives rent-free in my head, and I can't remember the name of the, like, comedian group that did it, where they're, like, a bunch of bros going down the street, and they're, like, jumping up and down, and they're like, yeah, bros! And then they go up, and they're like, all right, true or false, for a dollar, masculinity is a prison. And people are like, true, and they're like, true! Masculinity can be a prison, baby! It lives rent-free in my head. You all should look it up somehow. I'm not sure how. Anyway,
I want to know how that video reached you. Who in the algorithm was like, Margaret needs that?
I don't know. But next time you meet one of these people on your dating app, it's like they're saying, I am in prison and other people are in charge of me. Because that's the only way you get alpha wolf behavior. Of course, the prison in this case is patriarchy, and it's real. And it's probably why human men exhibit this behavior. And, I mean, frankly, it's why an actual prison, you see the same dynamics, but much, much worse, right? Mm-hmm. It is a thing that people and wolves do in captivity is they create pecking orders and are terrible. In the wild, wolves form family units, a mated pair and their offspring. Sometimes the kids fuck off at a year of age and start their own thing, but sometimes they don't. Sometimes they stick around a while longer and help the next round of puppies. And some packs do form with multiple breeding pairs occasionally. I believe in this case, it's always the oldest wolf that is the lead wolf. But to quote a research science, Kira Cassidy, quote, the wolves generally in the dominant positions within a pack are not there because they fought for it. It's not some battle to get to the top position. They're just the oldest, or the parents, or in the case of same-sex siblings, it's a matter of personality.
You hear that, Anderson? I'm older. I'm the pack leader. She's like, yeah, okay.
You haven't proven it.
She's like, another treat, human!
I wrote most of this script with my dog laying on my lap or running around barking at things that he's not supposed to bark at, aka being perfect.
Yes.
Wolves do fight other wolves. This is actually the leading cause of death for wolves. Whoops. But they don't fight inside their own pack. They fight for territory. And this part I thought was kind of cool. The packs that win the most are the packs with the oldest wolf, not the packs with the most wolves, because the elders are calmer and wiser. And they're like, oh, we shouldn't fight. That's a bad idea. When they would otherwise lose.
Nice.
So, yeah. Now I want you to guess, Sophie, how many people are killed by wolves every year in the United States on
literally
average?
Literally none.
Yeah, that's the correct guess.
Oh, is it actually none?
Yeah, that's how many people are killed by wolves in the average year in the United States. In the past 20 years, wolves have killed exactly one person.
I bet that person did a stupidity.
I don't know. I think she was just like hanging out in like backwoods Alaska and someone was real hungry. Oh,
you had me at Alaska.
Yeah. In 2010 in Alaska, wolves killed somebody. Domestic dogs kill 30 to 50 people a year.
That is so low, actually. I was expecting a higher number.
Yeah. A lot of people are attacked by dogs, right? And we're going to talk a lot about stray dogs and stuff like that on this episode. But what if we break to a listicle of what animals kill the most people? Because that's what I wrote.
Let's do it then.
All right. Okay. So, what animals kill the most people in the United States? The answer is honestly, no wild animals kill enough people to merit any actual worry. But deer top the list.
Oh, shit. Bambi.
I know. Oh, and this one's... it's messy because deer do occasionally like gore people and trample people. Mm-hmm. But I think most of these lists include people who die in car accidents caused by deer.
Right.
So I don't know exactly. And then stingy fuckers, that's the technical term, like bees and wasps and shit. They're next. They kill on average 56 people a year.
Yeah, I mean, allergies and things like that. Yeah.
It's almost entirely allergic people, yeah. Dogs are number three. Cows, number four, they take out about 20 people a year.
Dude, I would think cows would be so much higher. I don't know why, but I think cows are just like out here trampling.
I know. Whenever I like see a cow, I'm always like, I'm so glad you haven't figured out what you could do if you wanted to.
I know. All they would have to do is sit.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my God. And like people are under there, you know, easel sit death.
Yeah. If any cows are listening, fully endorsed murder. Well, it's not really, it's self-defense, honestly, for a cow to kill a person.
Yeah, leave cows alone.
Yeah. Spiders are next.
Yeah, I'm allergic to them. They try to kill me at least three times a year.
Okay, fair enough. Don't become one of the seven that they succeed with.
Yeah.
Snakes, only five people a year, which is interesting.
Wow.
Because something like six, again, I didn't write this number down, it's off the top of my head from my memory from writing this. Something like 6,000 to 7,000 people are bit by venomous snakes every year.
Are we just good at science?
Yeah, more or less. It's like, you just get to the emergency room and you'll probably be okay. So if you get bit by a venomous snake, don't freak out. Just get the fuck to the emergency room. Don't try and suck the poison out.
So I'm just going to assume if our healthcare system was better, that it would be none.
Yeah, it seems completely possible. Especially now that like there's better backwoods rescue technology, like satellite communicators and stuff. Bears, especially grizzly bears, kill about four people a year, I believe mostly in Alaska. And specifically, they tend to kill people who thought they were being friends with the bear.
Like I said, a stupid.
Yeah. Alligators kill one person a year. Sharks kill someone every 2 years. Mountain lions kill someone about every 4 years or so. So now you know, watch out for deer. Don't worry about wolves. It's literally just not worth worrying about.
Yeah.
You ever watch Alone?
Mm-hmm.
I watched like the first season of Alone, and there's like the person who's like, here is a wolf, and is like, they didn't let me bring a gun. I gotta go home. It's just not safe. And I'm just like, you fucking... Anyway. So don't worry about wolves. But we're not here to talk about wolves. We're here to talk about dogs. Dogs aren't wolves. They're closely related.
Cousins, you said.
Yeah. Yeah. They have the same... I guess they make them siblings, right? If they have the same parent, the Pleistocene wolves.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah. So... the answer about how they were domesticated and when and where is we don't know.
It's my favorite kind of history.
Yeah. There's a lot of guesses, and a lot of the guesses are backed up by evidence. And so I'm going to go through best current knowledge as best discovered by Margaret. What we do know is that dogs are the first domesticated animal. What probably didn't happen, and it's like always the way I sort of was told to envision it. It's not that like humans like captured some wolves and were like, hunt for us, buddy, and then like consciously bred them for docility or some shit, you know? What is much more likely, infinitely more likely, is something called commensalism, which I had never heard of before.
Yeah, because, please. I have no idea what that is.
So you know how like in high school science has betrayed us all because it tells us, we think we know everything, we actually know nothing. Mm-hmm. In high school science, I learned about parasitism, and symbiosis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Commensalism is something different. It is sort of in between the two. It is where one species gets benefits from another species while neither helping nor hindering the other species. So it's just like an animal, like a raccoon digging through your trash can, especially if it like doesn't leave a mess somehow, is not a parasite, right? Because it doesn't damage the host. It is a commensal. I'm going to go with that. Relationship. And so probably a long ass time ago, most likely currently suspected in Siberia or Southeast Asia, until more recently people are thinking mostly East Asia and Southeast Asia, and now people are leaning a little bit more towards Siberia, and I'm sure it'll change. A bunch of wolves were like, hell yeah, we can eat the food that humans throw out. And they started hanging out near the humans. Or it might have even been, hell yeah, we can prey on the animals that eat the food that humans throw out, right? And the calmer wolves were able to do better in proximity to the humans since they didn't run away as much. And so these less fearful, less human aggressive wolves, they evolved physically. Their snouts shortened and they ended up with fewer teeth. They were doing less of the killing themselves, basically. And soon, honestly, my suspicion is like right away, but I don't know. No one really knows. Soon this commensalism moved to mutualism, which is another word for symbiosis that is technically different. And I spent a while trying to read about the difference. I'm just going to use the word mutualism, where both species gain advantages. And there's so many advantages. Having wolves around probably was part of the direct hunting, right? The wolves, now dogs, would corner prey for humans to finish off, just like how people hunt with dogs today. And this is like even more certain or guessed upon, is that they protected the kill from other predators, right? Because as soon as you like bring down a mammoth, all the other animals are like, yo, what's up? Can I have some of that? And you got all these wolves around being like, no, the fuck you can. You can't have any of it. That's for the humans and me, you know? And also, you can sleep soundly at night because your camp is surrounded by fucking wolves. And yeah. I would argue, and this is my own hypothesis, that emotional support wolf was probably just as important as anything else right from the start.
Yeah. Who doesn't want the comforting feeling of a wolf in their life?
Because like, this is only like somewhere between 30 to 40,000 years ago when they became dogs. So probably you're going back tens or hundreds of thousands of years before that. But you're still talking about Homo sapiens. You're still talking about us. You're talking about someone that could fucking be raised in our society and be a normal person in our society, right? Now, so if you take one of us and a wolf nearby dies and there's all these wolf puppies and they're like, oh no, what will we do without our mother? Like, it's cute as shit.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee they also needed unconditional love back then.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. We all need unconditional love. Which leads me to my statement. Humans and dogs belong together, always have. Both are better for it.
Yes.
And this is the thing that, like, it wasn't a violent controlling act. It's not the destruction of the wildness of the animal. dogs were domesticated long before the widespread practice of agriculture also, which I thought was kind of interesting. And again, we don't know exactly when, but we know that modern DNA science-y stuff suggests that the evolutionary deviation from regular wolves started 30,000 years ago, around the time that the Ice Age was at its iciest, when we probably needed each other the most, frankly. And the first, yes, we are 100% certain this is a modern dog, entirely this is a dog, right, is the remains of a little guy who died and was buried with his people 14,200 years ago in what's now Germany. There's more that dogs offer us. To quote from the New Yorker, the Ojibwe people, a North American indigenous group, say that the wolf was given to the first human as a companion. They see wolves as mentors to humans, modeling how to behave in a social group and how to behave while hunting. And this is like particularly interesting when you think about the fact that the alpha wolf thing is absolute garbage and actually, it actually probably was decent modeling for people, you know? It's also hypothesized that our pact with dogs is how we outcompeted the Neanderthals. Basically, we are really good at hunting with dogs. It's like fucked up. It's like just a cheat code, right? You know, you're like, you go chase the thing and corner it. I've got the pointy stick. I'll kill it once you've got its back against a wall, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. And then the weirdest one I ran across, and this might not be true, but it is hypothesized by a scientist. The reason we have whites in our eyes might be because we hunt with dogs. The sclera, the white of the eye, is not white in most animals, and it is white in dogs, and it is white in humans, and it is white in very few other primates. Like, there's individual primates who have it, but it's not like a species-wide trait in any other primate, as far as I can tell. To quote The Guardian, the wolf possesses white sclera, as does Homo sapiens, though crucially it is the only primate that has them. And then according to author Pat Shipman, who's quoted in the same Guardian article, the main advantage of having white sclera is that it is very easy to work out what another person is gazing at. It provides a useful form of nonverbal communication and would have been of immense help to early hunters. They would have been able to communicate silently, but very effectively. And it is possible, and is this author Pat's hypothesis, that we evolved white sclera because we hunted with our dogs. Yeah.
I do always say that Anderson has my eyes. So...
yeah.
Science says I am correct.
Yeah. Wherever dogs were first domesticated, wherever their people went, they went. And soon you have four distinct haplogroups, which is not a term I really understand, but basically subtypes of dogs. And dogs just went everywhere. They went across the land bridge into North America. And there's all kinds of arguments about whether some specific types of canines are really dogs or come from the same place, etc. But this is the gist of it. This is the gist of dog existence spread. And this is not meant as a slight to cats. They started being domesticated probably in Western Asia around 10,000 years ago. It seems likely that the thing that the cats sort of offer is they prey on the rodents that eat grain stores and such, right? But today is a dog day. And we're talking about stray dogs. Especially we're talking about riot dogs. But first, there's more context.
But before you get to that context, mm-hmm. Do you know what time it is?
Time to learn what's good for us to exchange money for?
Well, I thought it would be fun because I feel like a lot of the listeners listening to this episode will like dogs. Mm-hmm. To give some, for the ad breaks, to recommend some of my favorite dog products.
Oh, okay.
As the official sponsor. And if anything else comes up, it is wrong.
Okay.
I want to recommend these Anderson's really smart and she really liked, and we used to live in a really tiny apartment, so she didn't have a yard to run in or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got recommended these Nina Ottosen puzzles.
Okay.
And you can hide dog treats or whatever snacky in there and they have to like figure out. And Anderson would spend, you know, 20 minutes or 10 minutes or, she's pretty smart, so like 2 minutes. sniffing through and opening and figuring out how to do the puzzle, and it's really good for the for dog brains and is fun. So yeah, I would like to plug the Nina Ottosen puzzles.
Hell yeah. And then whatever this other stuff is.
I'm late. They couldn't be.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested, cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back. So, there are stray dogs and there are feral dogs. Or, as they're sometimes called, to try and make them more technical sounding, free-range unowned dogs. I don't think anyone actually calls them that except, like, articles. Most dogs in the world are free-range unowned dogs. I didn't realize this. Less than a quarter of all dogs are pets with specific caretakers. Across a lot of the world, dogs are more likely to be sort of owned by the community if they're owned at all, like the village or just, sometimes just nobody. These dogs tend to be commensal, like not just the ones that are owned by community, but the dogs that are unowned or whatever. They live off trash and such, right? Going back to their roots. And stray dogs are dogs that start off living with some people. Feral dogs have generally never had a person who they're paying attention to. I hate them. It's funny. I hate the word, like, owned with my dog. Renshaw is my dog, right? I think the possessive pronoun makes sense. And so I don't mind saying that. But I hate being like, I'm Renshaw's owner. And I'm like, whatever.
See, I'm Anderson's human. And she, she definitely is in charge here. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So. Both stray and feral dogs both live lives where they tend to avoid or occasionally attack people. They are usually presented as a problem for the human community and that they live in proximity to, but not always. And that's actually going to come up a couple times in this week's story. Sometimes the community cares for these dogs. Sometimes they kill these dogs. Sometimes they do a combo move where they care for some of them and kill other ones. And we're going to talk about that in a bit, unfortunately. That'll be the sad part of this day's episode.
But first, you did not warn me about this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about them, not right now, it'll be a little bit later. We are going to talk about the way in which society deals with stray dogs. most of the individual dogs in this episode do very well.
Okay.
Let's talk about a famous, and this is a thing, this gets presented as famous, I'd never heard about this in my life. You ever heard of Bummer and Lazarus? You're a California person.
Yeah, I mean... yes, but no, if that makes sense. Like,
totally. It's,
but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
What you got for me?
There is a famous duo, famous in the stray dog world, Bummer and Lazarus. All the stray dogs know these dogs. They lived in San Francisco in the 1860s.
I'm from Los Angeles. I don't know about San Francisco.
It's the same thing. It's California. It's one state.
No.
How big could it be? Two New Jerseys?
It's large and in charge.
Three Rhode Islands. I guess if a state is as big as like four Rhode Islands, I guess I could imagine not knowing the other side of it.
It's like the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world.
Yeah. Actually, it turns out, that's going to come up. California's outsized economy, even in the 1860s, is going to come up in today's story.
Cool.
So. This is decades before San Francisco burned to the ground. There are a lot of street dogs. In nearby Los Angeles.
Ever heard of it?
Yeah. It's a whole country. Stray dogs there outnumbered people 2-1 in the 1840s.
Man, I wish that was true when I lived there.
Well, except that everyone was poisoning them with strychnine all the time.
Oh, well, Margaret, you should have led with that.
Okay. Some dogs figured out a way to avoid the strychnine, which was by pleasing people, by killing rats. And so, like, kind of like coming out ahead on like, hey, I'm a stray dog and I might like fight your sheep, but you know what? I kill rats. And people are like, all right. So these dogs, the ratters, sometimes they get spared and loved. Which brings us to Bummer. Bummer was a mutt's mutt, medium-sized, half Scottish terrier, half, I'm quoting a 1901 article that is going to mention a breed that Google does not know anything about, half Japanese snub-nosed poodle. Yeah, that's what one newspaper article calls it.
And let's be honest, it probably was none of those things. It was probably just a dog.
Yeah, it was just a dog. Mm-hmm, absolutely. Another book says that it was a Newfoundland mutt. It's just a dog. It's also not nearly the size of anything Newfoundland shaped.
Yeah.
Anyway, mutts are the best.
Yes.
Bummer was born in Petaluma and then came with this guy, a journalist named Ned Knight, into the city and then somehow ended up astray. So I hope that Ned died because that is the only reasonable reason that his dog became astray. And otherwise, fuck him. One of Bummer's ears.
I was like, I'm waiting for you to say it because it's in the script and it needs to be said.
Yeah.
Like, Ned, I hope you died. Otherwise, fuck you.
Yeah. One of Bummer's ears was shorter than the other. Maybe it was cut. Maybe it had been bitten. He's an ugly little guy. He started hanging out. I mean, this in only positive ways. He started hanging out in front of the saloon and killing rats and begging for scraps. And he lived a lonely life until 1861. A year after he'd found his station, he saw another medium dog in trouble, under attack by a larger dog. In comes Bummer, drives off the larger dog, David versus Goliath. But it was too late, this other dog, he was fucked up, caught in the leg, not expected to live. Bummer nursed him back to health, brought him food, cuddled with him for warmth in the cold streets. Thus was born Lazarus, his companion for years. And the two dogs begged together and ratted together and just hung out in front of the saloon.
That's
and everyone
beautiful.
Loved them. Yeah. They were famous. There's a really funny reason why they were famous. Every newspaper was writing about them. Every journalist was like exaggerating their personalities or inventing new ones whole cloth. Like there'd be like gossip rag stuff about them, you know? Because the bar that they hung outside of was the journalist cafe that all the journalists hung out at.
And so they were like the first dog influencers.
Yeah, totally. Bummer and Lazarus, the first dog influencers. And political cartoons would feature them. One day, Bummer survives this, to be clear. One day, someone shot Bummer in the leg.
Who the fuck shot Bummer in the leg?
I don't know.
Fuck them.
I hope they died. And Lazarus went off to beg with another dog in the meantime, and the newspapers were furious. What ingratitude, right? But then the wound healed and Lazarus returned. Bummer forgave him and back they went to it. One time they stopped a runaway horse, and so they were heroes. One time they killed, like, I forgot to write this in a script. They killed like 80 rats in 20 minutes or some crazy shit. Just fuck ton of rats. And anyway, but so they're heroes. The newspapers are writing about them because there's nothing else happening in the first half of the 1860s in the United States that's newsworthy. I got like most of the way through this and I was like, oh, la, 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 1863. I was like, I think there was bigger things happening.
I was like, that's so cute. They're giving news space to these little dogs, the dog influencers.
Yeah.
We're completely forgetting the date.
Yeah, yeah. To be clear, 1861 to 1865 was the American Civil War. California wasn't connected to the rest of the country by railroad yet. So in many ways, it was isolated. That came in 1869. Yeah, yeah. The Transcontinental Telegraph was brand new as of 1861. But Californians did do a bunch of anti-slavery fighting. Thousands of Californians joined regiments out east. And then California's gold was crucial to the war effort. And they also went and helped prevent the slave empire of the Confederacy from taking Arizona and New Mexico. So California did hold its own. That collection of four New Jersey-sized area, or four Rhode Islands, right? Anyway, in 1862, sorry. No, I did get it right, but I wrote it wrong in the script. I wrote 1962 in the script, but I'm going to say 1862 because that's when this happened. A new dog catcher was doing the rounds and picked up Lazarus because Lazarus was a stray. An angry mob forced the guy to let Lazarus go. And the city declared that the pair were exempt from the laws against strays. Because they were the people's heroes. They were still dogs.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's because they're doggos.
Yeah, exactly. They're still doggos. Bummer used to kill sheep and get into fights with other dogs. That might have been why he got shot in the leg. I don't know. Both
he
of them.
He was innocent.
Yeah. I support him even if he's innocent. And both of them used to trash shops that they fit. They would like go wander into a shop and then it would get like locked up behind them, right? Because the day would end and the person wouldn't notice that the strays had gotten in. So they would just trash the shop. But I would too if I was locked inside a... Anyway. And then all dogs eventually come to an end. One day in 1863, someone poisoned Lazarus and his second death stuck. Bummer was inconsolable. In 1865, he died as well. A drunk kicked him so hard that he lasted only a few more days. The drunk was arrested, and once he was in jail, his cellmate found out what he did and then, quote, popped him on the smeller. So at least there was some kind
this
of both.
This is the problem with doing like it's the same thing as like you go to see a dog movie. You know how it ends.
I know. I'm sorry.
You know how it ends. But also, like, who poisons a dog? Who kicks a dog? What the fuck is wrong with these people?
I agree.
It's despicable. I just read the next sentence. Oh my God. What?
So Bummer was eulogized by Mark Twain, but in a weird, mean-spirited way.
Yeah, well, that's Mark Twain for you.
I know. At first I was like going to quote his eulogy, and then I was like, whatever, fuck Mark Twain.
Fuck Mark Twain.
Both the dogs were taxidermied and put on display in the saloon. Yeah, I don't know whether it feels. I don't know how I feel about that one.
I don't enjoy that, but okay.
Eventually, they were donated to a museum that eventually, it gets written as destroyed what was left of them, but honestly, I'm going to go with put them to rest. And there's a plaque up about them now, which ends with, quote, two dogs with but a single bark, two tails that wagged as one. Aww. They were good
That's
dogs.
That's beautiful.
I know. And they were the first news. I mean, I'm sure there's other news stray
dogs.
They're
dog influencers.
Yeah. And I think a context, I wanted to lead with the dogs, but there's some interesting humans in San Francisco during this time. And
you
I think
it just stopped with San Francisco.
Yeah. This is the era of San Francisco eccentrics. Most famous was this guy, Joshua Abraham Norton, aka Emperor Norton, who I didn't think I was going to whatever quite make his way into cool people, but actually after reading about him, I think he qualifies on his own. In 1859, this man who was essentially penniless declared himself Norton the First, Emperor of the United States. He's a very San Francisco figure. He was an immigrant. He's a white guy born in England, raised in South Africa. He had been this is why he's so San Francisco in my mind. He was a real estate speculator and commodities trader who lost everything in some rice market speculation shit. So he declared himself emperor, and people were like, yeah, all right, whatever. And he wore a uniform with a fancy hat and fancy feathers. The emperor, basically, I wish we still treated eccentrics this way. He was granted free ferry rides and train rides, because after all, he's the emperor of the United States. Police officers saluted him as he walked by, doing his rounds, quote, inspecting the streets and sidewalk, which is what he spent most of his days doing. Businesses he went to would accept currency with his name on it. People gave him food. Some people actually assumed he was rich, but he was poor as fuck. He lived in a boarding house. People sold souvenirs with his face on it. So it's like kind of this weird trade where basically like the city made a ton of tourism dollars off of their like guy who called himself emperor, you know? At one point, he called up the army to declare war on Congress, but oddly enough, no one came. He did make some good laws, or these might be apocryphal. People argue about what he said. According to a potentially apocryphal story, he announced that anyone who called San Francisco Frisco would be fined $25, which is almost $600 today. I'm okay with that law coming back, I think. It's just needlessly petty, and, you know, we're going to have laws. He also demanded that religions weren't allowed to fight each other. And the thing that I found that is not apocryphal, that I dug in a bunch about, and why he's a cool person doing cool stuff, is that he tried his hardest to leverage his weird fame to fight against anti-Chinese racism in San Francisco. He used the two tools at his disposal. One, the newspapers liked to publish his eccentric proclamations. And two, that people let him speak at pretty much any meeting. So for a decade, he wrote proclamations saying that Chinese folks should be treated with respect. This is like during a big, huge, let's be even more racist to Chinese immigrants than people are today, you know? Then in 1878, a crowd of racist union guys, because another thing that keeps coming up on this episode is that there's a lot of bastards who are union guys. A bunch of them were forming, planning on some, let's call them murder riots, which was a common enough thing in the racist Bay Area at the time. So he showed up and he stood on a box and he was like, hey, let me speak, I'm the emperor. And then the racist Irish guy in charge of the mob was like, okay, yeah, you're the emperor, you can speak. And basically he was like, as emperor, I command you all to go home. And it didn't work. But the fact that this guy just walked right into this angry group of thousands of dudes to be like, shut the fuck up and stop being racist.
It's cool people who did cool stuff.
Yeah. And that the tie to Bummer and Lazarus is that in cartoons, he was always presented as the owner of Bummer and Lazarus because they became, they're all like characters. And this actually, I mean, it gets into some stuff that like, it's bad when we make animals mascots. It's even worse when we make humans mascots, especially people who are neurodivergent, right? But he gets presented as the owners of Bummer and Lazarus. And this is not true, but it fits the vibe at the time. He died in 1880 and some rich businessmen paid for his funeral. Equally popular at the time, but not remembered so clearly today, one final eccentric was Frederick Coombs, sometimes called George Washington II. He told people he was George Washington. He was also a phrenologist. He walked around measuring people's skulls. I kind of like don't like this guy. He wore a Revolutionary War uniform because he was George Washington, and he had a public beef with Emperor Norton, and eventually he fled to New York City. His argument was that Emperor Norton doesn't like me because I'm successful with all the ladies. And he spent the rest of his days trying to sell people photographs of himself visiting Benjamin Franklin's grave. And since I like Norton so much because he spent his all of his fame trying to stop racism, I've just like decided that Frederick Coombs is the heel in this story. But I have no information about that. I don't know.
You know? I trust you.
I don't know if these are just exceptions or society used to treat like sort of public neurodivergent figures who don't have any money differently and more kindly than they do. But yeah, that's Bummer and Lazarus. Let's talk about dogs. And let's get to the saddest part of all week.
All right, let's do ads first.
Okay. With that, people will totally listen to these ads. They'll be so excited on the edge of their seat. Can't wait to come back. Okay, what's the thing I like for my dog? I really like having a hands-free leash. I go hiking with Rentra all the time. It's funny, I don't know what brand leash I have, but when I go hiking, I see a lot of
really good ones. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great being able to hike with him hands-free, and I recommend it.
Don't forget to bring water for your dogs on hikes.
Yeah. I use a little collapsible bowl, and Rentra mostly ignores it unless he's really thirsty. Here's some other ads.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
We're back. And we're going to talk about how society treats animals. Which...
I don't like the subtitle for this section of the script, but go off.
This subtitle is euthanasia. Doing this research changed my opinion about some stuff in really interesting ways. So, in that I've learned more about more alternatives that other countries have developed to euthanasia. I was like, going to just like leave that there. And then I was like, people are going to think that I've like, anyway. So most of our heroes are stray dogs this week. Generally speaking, stray dogs are seen as a problem for people. Some ungodly high percentage of humans who get rabies from dog bites. It's like more than 90%. Bats are like, I think, the only other thing that comes anywhere near it. And rabies fucking sucks. Rabies just kills you unless you run quick as hell to get a rabies vaccine as soon as you're bit. It has 100% mortality without treatment. The first person to survive rabies without a vaccine was a kid in 2004 who was bit by a bat. And so doctors...
I remember this!
Yeah. Because it was a big deal.
This was a huge story that I haven't thought about since 2004.
Yeah.
Wow.
This kid gets bit by a bat, does not get doesn't realize that it's a problem. So doesn't immediately go get the... I think it's called prophylactic when you get the vaccine afterwards. And yeah, starts getting sick. And the doctors put her into a medically induced coma and her body fights off the disease on its own. More people have survived using this method now, but it's like not a lot more people. The most recent article I found is about 10 years ago, and they were like, the third person to survive rabies, you know? So rabies is really fucking bad, and stray dogs are really good at spreading rabies.
Yeah.
Even when they're not rabid, packs of wild dogs are not always safe to be around, especially for children, especially for elderly people. And it is a social issue, right? There are a bunch of different ways that different countries try to deal with the problem of stray dogs. There's two main ones. And I think that it provides important context because we're talking about stray dogs and what they face and what they deal with. The US and a lot of other countries just kill them. You can dress it up in a lot of different ways. Overall, strays are taken to shelters. They're given a sort of limbo period to see if anyone claims them or adopts them. And then they're euthanized. This is generally supported as the best and most humane practice. Literally, the Humane Society does it, as does PETA. The only group I want to like say, like, this pisses me off. It pisses me off that PETA does it, because PETA's whole thing is like humans shouldn't eat animals, which I've been vegan for, I don't know, 21 years, 22 years, something like that. I don't think that it's wrong for humans to eat animals. It really annoys me that someone who takes that stance is going to say like, well, we just euthanize animals and that's fine. Because it's like, in my mind, it's like, pick one. I don't know.
There's a lot of hypocrisy.
Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily hypocritical for other people who care about animals to try and deal with this problem. But I'm going to try not to moralize too much about this. It is the accepted method that I grew up in a society that have used this as the accepted method. There's no good statistics available, but the main statistic that is cited is that as of 2008, 3.7 million cats and dogs are euthanized a year in the United States. The US doesn't have a stray dog problem to the same degree as some other countries. So in some ways, you could say that this works, sort of. I want to compare it to a different strategy that doesn't sort of work, that actually just works or has worked for both the Netherlands and Germany. They have two different attitudes. In 2022, the Netherlands declared itself the first country with no stray dogs. They did it without euthanasia. They did it by setting up a program called Collect, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return, which does what it says on the tin. Like, that's what they do. They collect, they neuter, they vaccinate, and then they return the animal to the streets. They also put a massive tax on store and breeder bought dogs. I think this isn't nationwide. I think this is like municipalities do this. So rescue at dogs are the thing, right? You want a rescue animal. Everything else is kind of frowned upon socially and crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And finally, they set up a sort of animal cop force, not like dogs who are cops, but people who police basically at people who go around and find people who abuse dogs and then like get them in trouble, right? Putting like massive fines. Go ahead.
I was going to say that's the first time I've heard somebody use the word cop in a good way.
No, it's very, like it's very...
That's super interesting.
Yeah. And so you create this environment where animal abuse is taken seriously. Throwing out animals is taken very seriously. And every stray animal is sterilized and vaccinated. So they're not going to be rabid and they're not going to reproduce. So you just don't have to kill them.
It just makes sense that it works.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, the Netherlands is a much smaller country and it's a much smaller population than the United States.
Right.
But even in that smaller scale, it's quite impressive.
Yeah, it is. Germany is the other country. It's funny because in 2022, Netherlands declared itself the first nation with no stray dogs. Germany is like ahead of them and does it slightly differently.
But had worse branding?
Yeah, probably. Germany is just like, we don't want to declare ourselves number one at anything. It's just bad.
Yeah.
We're only number one in self-depreciation these days. It's the only thing we're the best at. So Germany has a slightly different attitude, but not an incredibly different attitude. There's no euthanasia for healthy dogs allowed.
I'm glad that Germany's taking a no euthanasia stance.
Yeah. It is illegal for stores to sell pets. Breeding dogs requires extensive certification. There's like buying a dog from a breeder costs thousands of dollars. So getting a pet from a shelter is the way to do it unless you have very specific needs. Like, oh, I need the following kind of hunting dog or whatever, right? Their shelters have adoption rates upwards of 90% as a result, whereas like I looked it up, but I had done written in the script. It's like less than a quarter of in the U.S. Unadopted dogs live in the shelters for the rest of their life. This is the main difference between them and the Netherlands and some other countries, is that the dogs are never put back on the streets. They live in the shelters, and that is financed by the government, right? Subsidized by the government. And if you're caught abandoning your pet, you get a 25,000 euro fine.
That's dope.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this would magically work in the US, right? We have a lot of very different things going on culturally, but slowly building a culture where it's like there's this thing in the US where people are like, oh, I'm going to make money. I mean, one, everyone's poor, right? Because the US is fucked. And since everyone's poor, they're like, well, I have this thing that can possibly make me money. If I don't get my dog fixed, it can make more dogs and I can sell those dogs. And that is like, what a lot of people choose to do because of their financial situation. And then they abandon those dogs because they can't sell them, right? Or they can only sell like one out of 10 or, you know, whatever.
Just to say though, mm-hmm. like I feel like there has been a shift where there used to be pet stores that had dogs available in mm-hmm. their stores and puppy mills and things like that. Specifically when I was growing up, there were stores at malls that just had these puppy mills. That doesn't exist. Childhood me protested and things like that.
Yeah.
But these things existed. And now, for the most part, there's still breeders. There's still things like that. But I would say puppy mills and dogs for sale at stores is very, it's the outside. It's very, it's the outlier in the situation. Would you agree?
I think you're probably right. I haven't thought about it. I used to think about puppy mills and stuff like that when I was first getting involved in politics and stuff. And I haven't thought about it in a while, so I haven't like looked. But you know, you're right. I'm not used to like walking into a store and seeing the cage full of dogs anymore.
And yeah. I mean, there used to be like actual like brick and mortar stores that is all they sold were puppies. And they were in these like little hamster containers that were just horrible. And it was, but you know, I mean, most people are able to adopt, not shop at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say one of the things that my parents did right, did a lot of things right. My parents are great. They raised me right. All of our pets were rescues. It was never a consideration. That's how you take care of things that need help, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. I'm going to close out today with another highlighting of the sadness of the U.S. system.
Cool, cool, cool. Let's tell a funsy at the end.
Yeah, I swear, Wednesday's episode, fucking all hits. It's going to be it's all uphill from here.
Fuck yeah.
So I want to talk about some hero stray dogs. So a bunch of stray dogs were hanging out at U.S. Army base in Afghanistan. Three of them were named Sasha, Target, and Rufus. In 2010, in February, a man tried to suicide bomb the base. The three dogs attacked the man. He couldn't get past them, so he detonated himself early. The dogs saved 50 soldiers' lives. The U.S. should not have invaded Afghanistan, but fuck the Taliban also, so whatever. I understand people's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
This is not a morality tale, that part of it. Sasha died from her wounds from the blast, but Rufus and Target survived and were nursed back to health by the soldiers. And they were heroes. Soldiers pulled strings to adopt them and get them sent back to the U.S. where they could live with them. They went through all the red tape in order to do it. They appeared on Oprah, you know, with their dogs.
Oh, yeah, Oprah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I definitely have seen this. Friend of Behind the Bastards, Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, yeah. Did you hear how that ended?
Is it bad? No, I only remember the good dog stuff.
So Target escaped from his yard in Arizona briefly. Animal control picked him up and euthanized him.
Fucking Arizona. What the fuck is wrong with you? This is super fucked up.
Yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah. And that's what I like.
Fucking America. What a horrible place.
I know. It was like, I love that these dogs risked their life to defend the people who took care of them, who they cared about, you know? And the individual soldiers didn't betray them. The country that the soldiers
America
were fighting for did.
Rewarded them with death.
Yeah.
And Oprah.
Yeah. Two equally bad. I don't actually watch Oprah, but I have heard enough Behind the Bastards to have a sense. But when we come back on Wednesday, we're going to talk about really good dogs, all of whom lived good lives, loved by the people they loved. None of whom die violently or by, like, unhealthy euthanasia, you know? Mutualistic protection between protesters and dogs. Because when we come back, we're going to talk about riot dogs.
I'm so excited. Do you have a good Rintra story to lighten the mood before we exit this episode?
Yeah, let's see. So today, I'm staying with someone who is trying to milk a goat. And Rintra, with absolutely no training, loves herding sheep and goats more than he loves his own life.
Yeah.
And so he struggles a little bit watching calmly while the goat is being milked. But then when the goat got away, the goat is new to being milked. And it is for the goats, like the goat recently had a smaller goat and whatever. Anyway. And Rintra runs around. And so as soon as the goat got away, let Rintra go. And Rintra went and got the goat back. Or helped get the goat back. I don't know. I like watching him do his thing. It makes me really happy.
He's so smart and he's so sweet.
Yeah.
We were together recently and Rintra does not like cars.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Understandably so. A lot of dogs don't like cars and it's because of the vibrations. But as we were sitting there, I realized there was a pattern with Rintra that I thought was really fucking cool. Rintra only barked at like the traditional gas cars. Rintra never barked at the electric or the hybrids.
Yeah.
It was so fascinating. And obviously it's because there's like some difference in sound or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that's pretty fucking cool. Rintra is a cool dog who does cool stuff.
Yeah. He's always yelling, industrial society has had some consequences. We need to talk about them.
I love him.
Yeah, me too. And we'll come back and we'll talk about more dogs.
Hell yeah. I guess this is the time.
Oh, plugs. Right.
Yeah.
Sophie, the guest, what do you got? What do you feel like plugging?
I would like to plug my very good friend, Jimmy Loftus's
new book, Raw Dog, which if you're listening to this on Monday, comes out tomorrow. So pre-order. And if you're listening to this beyond Monday, it is officially out as of May 23rd. So check out Jamie's social media to figure out where to purchase or request it at your local library. Thank ya.
I am kickstarting a tabletop role-playing game called Penumbra City, and it will be kickstarting all June in 20 whatever year it is currently, 2023. And if you go now, I think this comes out before June, and you search Penumbra City Kickstarter, you'll be able to sign up for announcements on the very first day of it on June 1st. It's going to be 20% off the print book. We're going to make the PDFs and stuff as cheap as we can so that people can play without fronting a whole bunch of money or whatever. But the print books should be beautiful. And I've been working on this tabletop role-playing game for like fucking 10 years. And
awesome.
2 or 3 years ago, we finally got together with a really good team of people who can do the things that I can't do. Including tell me that I'm not in charge and it's actually a collective effort. And it's really fun, and I'll be plugging it all next couple weeks. And also go regular order Jamie Loftus's book.
Raw Dog.
Yeah. It's about hot dogs.
Hey!
If you like history and comedy.
There's a dog theme, but it's not the dog that we discussed today.
It's more sadness laced with comedy.
Yay.
And we'll see you all Wednesday.
Bye.
Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.
When it comes to your job, you're likely well-versed, but what about your skin? Life's busy enough. It doesn't have to be a big chore to get well-versed skin. Check out the dermatologist-tested, cruelty-free vegan skincare products from Verst. It's under $25 and available at your local Target store, making it easier than ever to take care of your skin from head to toe. Podcast listeners, here's an exclusive deal. 15% off at VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. That's VERSEDskin.com with code MEDIA15. Verst, available at Target.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.